Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 92 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host as usual. And I just want to take a moment here to do a couple of things before I introduce our guests for today. One is to wish everybody a happy holiday season. We're well into it by the time you hear this broadcast. So for those of you who have celebrated Hanukkah already, Mazel Tov. And for the other holidays coming up, I hope everybody has a pleasant Christmas season and a happy new year. So part of the difficulty for me at the end of the year is looking back at my lofty ambitions for, you know, this time last year, for the year that we've just completed. Part of my holiday angst is reviewing that past performance. And this year, I didn't hit my goals as much as I had hoped. And one of the things that I did a terrible job on was my goal of reading a business-related book every month. And by terrible, I mean I didn't do well at all. I think instead of 12 books, I actually only read 3. So I have to do something different this year, and I thought this would be a perfect opportunity to start the Law Entrepreneur Book Club. Probably not as exciting nor as anticipated as Oprah's Book Club, but still, I think we could make a go of this. So here's what I'm proposing to do, and I hope you will join me. As a friend of the podcast, what I'm going to do is select a book of the month to read, in part based on your suggestions. Now, for the first month, January, I'm going to go ahead and pick the book because we're late in the process here. So I'll have that announcement of the book here shortly. But I'll pick a book of the month for the first month, and then we'll kind of collaboratively decide what our next book will be. So we'll announce and promote the selection on the podcast and on our Facebook page and Twitter and, you know, all those platforms. And then here's the key part. We're going to have to read the book, or I'm going to have to read the book. For sure. And at the end of the month, I'm thinking on the final Thursday of the month, I'm going to actually do a Facebook Live book review on our Facebook page. So you need to be a friend of the Facebook page or a member of the Facebook group. So just go on to Facebook and search for Law Entrepreneur. You'll find us. Join the group and like the page, and that way you'll be aware of when we're getting ready to go live at the end of the month. And I think we'll probably also include a poll to rate the book. And then at the end of the year, we'll collectively determine which was the most well-liked book of the year. So that's my plan. I thought I'd share it with you and appreciate and welcome any feedback or thoughts you have on the matter. And I'll send out some notices to our list. Hopefully you're on our list. If not, just pay attention here on the podcast and we'll have more details in the days to come. Now, on to our guest of the day. I'm delighted to welcome Chelsea Lambert to the show. Chelsea is a legal technology specialist, a published author, and a CLE speaker, and is a former practice management advisor for the Chicago Bar Association, as well as a vice president of marketing for a leading case management provider. She's seen our industry from many angles. She recently published the nearly 200-page 2017 Legal Technology Buyer's Guide, which has been downloaded by thousands of law firms around the world. Chelsea regularly writes and teaches on law practice management and technology on her very popular blog, LexTechReview.com. We will link that up in the show notes. But you can listen to her now right here on The Law Entrepreneur. I present Chelsea Lambert. Chelsea Lambert, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you so much for having me, Neil.
I'm delighted that you're able to take time to be with us today, Chelsea. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Excited to be here, and hello to everyone listening. I have spent the last 12 years in the legal technology space. I started with 7 years at a legal technology and marketing startup, and then moved on. That was building products and services and selling them to attorneys, marketing them to attorneys. Then I moved on to be a practice management advisor at the Chicago Bar Association, where one of my favorite roles was being able to learn all of the different pieces of software and technology and products and services, and then teach our members and be a resource for members how to use it, how to use them, how to implement them in their practice. And then I went back into the vendor space as a VP of marketing CMO for leading case management provider, and then also a law firm practice management coaching service. So I've kind of seen the space and been involved in law firm technology implementation and law practice management from a couple of different viewpoints. Now I author a blog called Lex Tech Review, where we recently published a 200-page, almost 200-page legal technology buyer's guide that reviews all of the different products and services that are available to solo to mid-size law firms. So I live in this space between the law firm and the vendors, where I try and be a translator and create a platform where legal professionals and attorneys can come and get educated on what services and products are available to them. I teach regularly. You'll see webinars posted and advertised on my website, and then also profile all of the different technology solutions that are available. Yeah. No, new ones come out every about, I think, 5 minutes now. Yeah. So just trying to keep up with that.
Exactly. So did you title the buyer's guide, the law firm technology Bible?
No. Didn't go that far, because we're going to have multiple editions.
Okay.
To give you an example, we're releasing, I'm teaming up with good friend Brett Burney to release the e-discovery buyer's guide in January of 2018, because, I mean, there really is just so much. I mean, there's over 700 different solutions that can be used by law firms in different areas of running their business or in the case preparation delivery process.
So don't tell me that, because I'm a sucker for a new technology toy. So if you tell me there's 700 out there, I got a ways to go.
And new ones coming out all the time. I mean, it's just, you know, trying to keep up and stay focused, which is, you know, the reason why I created the platform and the guide, because I mean, just coming from the perspective of a business owner myself, you know, finding the time to pick something for your business when there's that much out there, you know, it was my goal to try and create a place where you could at least filter that list down based on what you were looking for, or get some real world examples and use cases in the form of a review.
And how do we go about getting this product? Because to me, it sounds like something that every small firm or solo practitioner who's building a practice ought to have sitting on their desk.
Oh, thank you. Yes, you can go to Lex Tech Review, LexTechReview.com. And there's a link at the top that says Buyer's Guide, and that will take you right there. You can download it. The file is fairly large, because it's about 170 pages. So you should be able to access it there. If anybody has any trouble or any questions, they're always welcome to email me as well.
Fabulous. Now, I have to confess that I'm a technology snob. I'm a Apple fanboy, dyed in the wool from the beginning, and unashamedly so. So I'm going to ask it from the bias perspective. Are Apple products covered in your guide?
They're not. I didn't cover hardware. The categories are broken down into, yeah. So I didn't cover hardware. That I would imagine we will release as its own mini ebook later next year. I actually have a couple ideas around how I'm going to do that. So just keep an eye out. The Buyer's Guide series is with such a large pool of options. There was no, in my opinion, it would have taken years to produce a book, and then by then it would have already been outdated. Sure. So what we're doing is we're releasing a series. So the first installation of the Legal Technology Buyer's Guide series was a general overview of case management solutions, virtual receptionist services, lead conversion tools, CRMs, communities, courses, and just general, you know, tried to hit all the functional areas of the law firm. Like even there's bookkeeping services and trust accounting platforms, you know, so really just what do we need to operate on a daily basis functionally as a business. Next, we're coming out with the eDiscovery Buyer's Guide. The one after that will be an expanded marketing services edition. The one after that will be recruitment, training, staffing, hiring. The one after that will most likely be hardware, because it's just, and then the goal is by having this library of these smaller editions, it'll be a little bit easier to navigate. So when you run into when you're finally starting to shop for a solution, you can go to that functional area of the practice or solving that particular problem, and there'll be an ebook, a buyer's guide associated with it.
Sure. I think it's a well thought out structure. And I guess also as a result, since did you also exclude Apple only software platforms?
No. So Apple only software platforms are interesting because almost everything runs in the cloud now. So if you are a Apple evangelist of sorts, you know, you're going to be able to access.
I wear the title fanboy, you know, comfortably.
Yeah, there you go. So if you're using dominantly Apple products, there's only a few situations that you're going to run into where you cannot use a product. For example, a lot of the document assembly tools are limited to running in a Windows environment because there are limitations to the Mac versions or Apple versions of Microsoft Office, or they require computing power where they have to have a local install. So that's where you see the limitations. If you're looking at cloud service providers, you're really not going to run into any that you won't be able to run on Apple devices.
Okay. Yeah. So for instance, one of our sponsors, and turns out is also my CRM, is a product called Daylight from Market Circle up in Canada. Now, they started off as a Mac-only installation, and they're still that same way, even though they have a cloud-based option. So we'll see whether or not that gets expanded to the point where the cloud service can also be used by Windows users, because I think they would have a market there, but that's their choice.
Yeah, I'm familiar with Daylight. It's a great product. You know, and it, again, it's like there's so much out there. And what I find more often than not is that attorneys are looking for that all-in-one silver bullet, which it's in my opinion, you're not going to find one. That's where, and if I can just kind of chat about that for a second, it's we have reached a point now where, based on personally what I've seen and the questions that I get asked when I deliver CLE speeches, is we've reached a point now where law firms have acknowledged that they need to run their business with case management software. That we have crested the summit of that mountain, and now, you know, stuck a flag in the top. Everybody knows we need some type of case management, whether they've adopted or not, the acknowledgement is there. The next phase in where I see things going is the integrations and add-on tools. So it was a hard enough battle to win from, especially coming, whether I'm talking from a trainer's perspective or as a former, you know, VP of marketing selling solutions. It was a hard enough battle to convince everybody that we have to spend, you know, $50 to $150 a month per user to implement case management. Now it's add-on integrations and it's add-on services. For example, TrustBooks is just for trust accounting, and they are integrated with Clio. You've also got Tally, that is Alexa-based time and billing application, where you can actually voice speak your time records or notate time records to Alexa on your Alexa devices, and it creates time records that then you bring into your case management platform. Then you have Lexicata, which is a CRM. You know, it's like if you're a fan of Daylight, a CRM that really supercharges that intake process and automates and helps you increase conversion rates on the front part of your office that then drops into that case management system. So, and then finally on the back end of case management is the accounting, the Xero, the QuickBooks integration. So we've got attorneys and law firms in a place where they acknowledge that they need a platform to run their business on. The next step is to augment and enhance the value of that data and the level of service that you can provide to your clients by adding on these case delivery or business specific tools.
Yeah. So what do you think is the biggest challenge to overcoming that hurdle with law firms? Is it the cost of implementation, or is it the technical understanding of the possibilities of the tool, or all the above?
It's all the above. I speak to it, you know, just as much of a solopreneur myself. I mean, I know and acknowledge what certain technologies can do for my business. It is making the time, acknowledging that I need to change what I'm doing, because when you're resistant to bringing on a change, implementing a change or adopting a piece of technology, it's not like you just buy it and all of a sudden you start making more money the next day or that a problem goes away. It's the investment in, if I bring on this piece of, like, from my personal perspective, I'm looking at this like really amazing, like whiz bang wow marketing software, and I know what it can do for my business. But it's taking that time, that 1 week, 2 week investment, moving everything in there, training on it. I just hired, you know, one of my first employees. You know, it's the process of getting that implemented that I think is the biggest area of resistance. Also acknowledging that you've got to ramp up business development to be able to pay for it. So either I have to bring in more clients in order to justify and cover that expense, which is challenge number one. And challenge number two is, in the process of also ramping up how many clients I have, which means I have more things to deliver, to taking the time to actually implement it.
Yeah. My sense is, having come from a technology background myself, is that lawyers are somewhat unique in their hesitancy to be forward thinking about using technology. They begrudgingly admit that technology can help them, but as you say, oftentimes simply are hoping that acquiring the technology, acquiring the platform, is sufficient, and are hesitant to put in that time to make it actually useful for their practice. And sometimes finding out that it's not, and they have to go in a different direction. And I think that frustrates many of us in the legal community, and to some extent turns them off of, you know, future improvements.
Right. Right. It does. It absolutely does. And that's really taking the time. And now is one of my favorite windows of opportunity, is that at the end of the year, you have a little bit less, you know, traffic from a calls and emails perspective, people are with their families during the holidays. I mean, certain practice areas see a spike, like unfortunately, family law, domestic violence, criminal defense see spikes around the holidays. But if you're in other practice areas, you have to look for those windows of opportunity. When do you know that you're going to have a lull in business or a lull in calls, and align your decision to implement technology or to jump into that next stage with those timeframes? You know, I'm always kind of look at December and the last 2 weeks of the year between Christmas and New Year's is kind of like my housekeeping, get it together, you know, close out the books, implement new technology, and then move into to the new year with a really, really strong foot forward, you know, goal setting, do a retreat, you know, plan out where you want to be a year from now. So you have to look for those windows of opportunity, and that can also help decrease the amount of anxiety and concern that you might have around affecting daily business.
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Market Circle, the makers of Daylight. Do you want to help more clients but don't have the resources? Do you feel overwhelmed by the amount of work to do that you can't even think about getting new clients? If this is you, I urge you to try out Daylight. Daylight is the Mac CRM that streamlines your practice and can save you hours of work each week. Daylight has helped thousands of small businesses, including my own, to manage more clients and cases without adding stress nor chaos. With Daylight, you don't need to fumble through files or notes to know where you are in a case. There's no more CCing your assistant on emails or passing around spreadsheets. Because Daylight now has a new team view that helps you see what everyone in your firm is working on. You can see everyone's appointments and tasks and easily schedule meetings for the entire team or a portion thereof. To learn how Daylight can help your firm, visit marketcircle.com/daylight. Be sure to let them know you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. That's Market Circle, the makers of Daylight. This episode is also brought to you by my friends at Spotlight Branding. I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to keep me top of mind with my referral network. Visit spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur. Spotlightbranding.com/TLE, brought to you by our friends at Spotlight Branding. Tell me a little bit about the process that you go through when you, when you're putting together the buyer's guide. How do you go about evaluating the products? Did you have a standard review format or a standard kind of approach to, you know, putting the tool through its paces, or how did that work?
Yeah. So half of it comes from my time at the Chicago Bar Association, being presented with solutions from the attorneys or by the sponsors that would come to us, and they would say, you know, take a look at our product. How should we best position this? Or members would bring a solution and say, hey, I found this. Can you take a look and see what it could do for my business? So you get demo accounts. I mean, I must have demo accounts to like everything in the, practically every solution in the space. You take a test drive, an attorney or a law firm will bring something to me and say, hey, I found it, or I've had great success with it. So it started with that list. It started with what's currently out there. What has a law firm come to me and said, hey, what do you think of this tool? Or I've had a really great experience. Then I get on the phone with the vendor. So what does that sales process look like? I treat everything as if it were a test. So if it takes me 8 emails to get a hold of someone, I will be totally frank and honest. There are a lot of people who didn't make it into that guide because I couldn't get a salesperson on the phone. And if I can't get a salesperson on the phone for you to sell me something, what is the customer service going to look like? The evaluation starts from that period of time. What does the communication feel like? What does the support feel like? So then we do a demo of the software where I'm asking a ton of questions about, you know, different features, and they'll issue me a demo account so that I can also play with it after the call is over. And then I write my review. And really what I'm looking for, you know, in those articles is, if you are this type of firm doing this type of work, these are the features that would be meaningful to you. I don't believe that there is an end-all, be-all, one-size-fits-all solution for every single practice in the industry. I just don't. You will see providers say, oh, we can, you know, be sold to every single practice area, any practice size. Doesn't matter if there are 1,000 employees or one employee. And it's just not the case. Because even if you do, you still find those limitations. You still find that you need an integration to handle really hardcore, you know, or very active trust accounting. You're still going to need an integration for credit card processing. You're still going to need, you know, so there's not that one size fits all solution. So the goal of my articles or webinars or anything that I teach is to provide my audience with the opportunity to learn the use cases and really the strongest features and highlight those, because those are the pain points that we're solving. And I'll give you an example. It's like text message appointment reminders and notifications. If you work in a consumer practice area where you have a very high no-show rate, or you have clients that are typically very difficult to keep engaged and to show up for their, you know, appointments or hearings, and it causes a lack of just a delay in the case delivery.
Causes you to get yelled at by the judge.
Right, right. I mean, what can you look for?
Mr. Tyra, where is your client?
Right. This is not a good situation, especially not if it's happening regularly. Then instead of shopping based off of a feature checklist, why don't we go look for a solution that's going to solve that problem? And this is something that I spoke about on in another interview recently. It's instead of, I feel like we've misled, and I will raise my hand and say I was part of the group that did this, you know, when I was, you know, VP of marketing in the vendor space. We've taught them to shop based on a feature checklist. And instead of starting with a needs assessment, because it's so easy for, you know, providers to like put together a feature checklist and say, oh yeah, we have that. Well, what is the extent of a client portal? Everybody has a client portal, but what is the extent of the client portal, right? So there's nuances within those features that really determine whether or not they solve a particular problem. And so that's the goal of the articles, the reviews, is to dig down deep enough, not just get, you know, like a high level demo, but to dig down deep enough to find those nuances and find those feature highlights and showcase those, instead of it being just a rundown. Yes, they have a client portal. Yes, they have document storage. Yes, they have versioning. Yes, they have, you know, it's much more than that. We're looking for unique individual traits that solve problems in daily law firm life.
And that's a great perspective when you're evaluating a tool, is to look at it from the needs assessment rather than you say as the feature checklist. Because I think if you look at it from the latter, the feature checklist, then the race is just to have a longer checklist. And you end up having products that are bloated with features that may not solve the real problems or needs of the end user.
Right, exactly. And I know that that's the case because, I mean, I would have, you know, when I was during my time at Smokeball, which is, you know, a phenomenal product, but, you know, it solves a very particular problem in that it has one of the strongest document automation assembly form tools in the space, hands down. Unfortunately, it does not run on a Mac, but hands down. And I worked with this attorney for probably about 30 minutes. It was at a conference. We did this great demo. He's all excited. He's like, oh my gosh, this is going to save me, you know, 10 hours a week. This is going to be amazing. And he goes a few booths down and he talks to another provider and he comes back, I kid you not, with like a clipboard. And he said, oh, well, do you have this and this? No. We don't have that, but are you going to use it? And he goes, well, I don't know. I just feel like for the same price that you should, I was like, well, it's not solving two different problems.
Exactly.
Like, you never would have asked me that if you didn't have a feature checklist in front of you and you're not even going to use it. I was like, are your clients even going to use it? And he goes, no, probably not, but I feel like you should have it. I'm like, it was just a complete.
Well, it's a false standard to try and live up to or to try and meet. You know, in one of my previous lifetimes as a software engineer, you know, one of the challenges that we have is having appropriate test data to drive the tool to the extremes or actually to put it through realistic scenarios. How do you address that problem, or do you?
Actually, I love that you brought that up, because I am going to personally put together a sample case file. This is another challenge that I see with the selection process. Everybody gets a demo account and it's empty.
Right.
What are you going to do with that? Like, how can you effectively, and I mean, again, raising my hand, like, I'm just as guilty in that vendor, you know, community of issuing a test accounts that didn't have anything in them. And then be like, what do you mean you don't like it? It's like, well, I can't see anything in there. So one of my goals for 2018 is to come out with a standardized test file specifically for the purposes of using it when you're demoing solutions. So go pick your top two, your top three, and then here's your sample case file. It'll be available to download for free at lextechreview.com. Look for that to come out before ADA Tech Show. And then go put it through its paces. It'll have a list of actions. It'll have a sample Excel sheet of contacts that you can upload. And you're going to get a much, in my opinion, it'll be easier for you to get a level of familiarity or a feel for the usability of that platform, because the law firms that come to me and say, this is what I'm looking for, and these are the two solutions that I've narrowed it down to, whatever you end up deciding, it should feel like home. It should be very comfortable to use. And so by having a standardized case file, even, you know, if it's not like this massive, complete library of what you would be moving into the platform if you're dealing with a migration, it will be enough for you to test drive it. And well, so
that is sorely needed, because as you've clearly pointed out, just playing around in an empty tool doesn't really tell you a lot. And it's really, you get that real world kind of experience if you have valid test data. Now, I will tell you also from our experience in software testing, that it's also critical to have problem data or data that doesn't exactly match the ideal scenario in your test set, because we used to have, you could make the tool really work great if all the data was perfect. But what happens when you have seven characters in the zip code or certain fields that are blank? You know, how does the tool handle problem data entry? And I think that's also an important area that's not often addressed by tool manufacturers.
Right. Well, and that also, you know, using this standardized case file or test data, and the providers will tell you, okay, go get an old case file that's closed and then load that in there, which is the closest thing that you would have to test driving it. That will open up a conversation with the provider. Hey, I tried to get this data in here and it didn't work. And, you know, then you get to see what is the customer service like, because you'll have a salesperson saying, oh, did you try it out? Let me show you this. Let me send you a video. Let me give you a call five times a day. So, you know, the salesperson is going to be on it trying to get you across the finish line. It's the customer service when you actually try and upload data and you run into those issues and errors. We'll see how they handle it and what their solutions are. Also now, what I'm very, very happy to see is you've got more and more of the providers that have migration tools. So they have gone out, and in some cases, you've got some that can import from over 70 different tools. I'll give you an example. Now, I was just speaking to a client of TimeSolve who migrated away from TimeSlips, posting that interview on my blog here in the next couple of weeks. But he said, I blocked off 2 months that I thought I would have had to run the two systems in parallel, and they migrated my data in a day. And I was like, that is amazing. Because how many people have you met that are like, can I just get away from time slips? This is horrible, but I can't leave. You know, so it's great to see providers like that step up and create migration tools, because it used to be just completely non-existent.
Well, I think it's still an issue, clearly. I mean, I have three different CRMs, so to speak. You know, I already mentioned Daylight, and I also use Contactually, another cloud-based system, for a different perspective, for a different part of the business. And then I have the Apple native contact and task management and scheduling. So being able to integrate all of those things and migrate data from one to the other is crucial to being able to extract the feature set. So tell me a little bit then about how you go about putting your blog posts together. So you've gotten the tool or the demo product, you've spoken to the people involved, you've done the interviews, you've gathered your data, you've got your impressions. What's the process for you when you sit down to construct the blog review?
So during the course of the demo, I'm taking notes the entire time. I'm taking notes along the lines of, sometimes it's funny, what shows up in the demo is where the person giving the presentation gets most excited. I've had the great pleasure of meeting some really amazing rock star customer service and salespeople that work for these providers. And you can tell when they are very, very passionate about a particular feature or an option. Or an attorney who has referred a solution to me says this particular portion of the tool really changed my life, like really just made it happen. And I couldn't imagine my world without it now. So I look to highlight those areas. That's really been what is important to me. It's showcasing those
that comes out in your writing too, because I read a number of posts, and you can tell the connection points and what's made an impression on you from your writing. So that's clear.
Oh, thank you.
Let me ask you this. So now you've worked in the vendor space, you've worked bar associations, you've worked in the service provision, and you've worked with all manner of attorneys and law firms, sizes and shapes and experiences. The business of running a law firm, where do you think that responsibility for educating the firm owner or the attorney, where does that responsibility lie?
So the business of running a law firm, is something that we've all in the community, I think, agreed could be done better in the law school environment. However, what is the likelihood that the law school system is going to reform and change what the curriculum in the 3L, you know, or even 2 to 3L years looks like? So,
I'm not holding my breath.
Right. I mean, and I've spoken at a lot of, progressive law schools. There's now incubator programs. I was fortunate enough to be involved in the JEP in Chicago, which is just a tremendous experience. And I would love to see every law school have an incubator program where attorneys could go and, in a safe environment with mentorship, be able to build their practice and have a year under their belt with all types of resources before they actually go out on their own. A couple areas that I think are just grossly neglected is the business development marketing piece. If we can't teach them how to put food on the table, all of this technology stuff isn't going to matter because they're not going to be able to pay for it. So one area that you see really growing right now, because many attorneys are realizing that they need the help or that they have to invest in education beyond law school as if law school didn't already cost enough, is the online courses and programs. So for example, Solo Practice University, one of the most highly respected and regarded post-law school business education programs. And I think they are, you can pay on an annual basis or a quarterly basis, amazing faculty. Susan has done an incredible job putting that together. And then you also have individual coaches. You have a legal marketing mentor. You've got how to manage a small law firm. You have AMP attorney consulting. You've got the Richard James program. You've got, I mean, there's just so much coming into the, and then, I mean, there's dozens of consultants and independent coaches and business education online tools. Law firm Autopilot is in there as well. You know, that you have to find your flavor, and I really think it is a flavor. I mean, I will be honest. I've had I'm enrolled in a mentorship business coaching program myself right now, and it took me a while to find one that I really felt identified with how aggressively I want to grow, what my personal goals are, my professional. You have to be at a place in your life where you're ready to commit and also ready to admit where your failures are, which can be a hard thing. And do you have enough, do you know enough about your business and what you want your law firm to be when you come out of school, which is also the challenge. So do I think that we're going to see law school reform happen rapidly enough to serve the need? That's a tall order.
Yeah. I don't think we're going to see law schools do it. I guess my biggest area of disappointment is bar associations who have failed to meet that challenge. You've got some, like the Chicago Bar, I've never visited, but having talked with my previous guest, Catherine Reach, and folks like yourself, who refer to it as just a wonderful, wonderful experience working in that environment, and how they really do tend to the needs of learning, you know, the business model. And then, as you said, the rest of it's left to the commercial environment. And people like, as you mentioned, Law Firm Autopilot, that's Ernie Svensson. He's been on the show. Great Legal Marketing, that Ben Glass, he was just on a little while ago. I haven't been able to catch Susan Lieber and pin her down from Solo Practice University. I'd love to have her on the show. So I'm going to have to double down and try and do that. So, but I think it's going to end up being a combination of all three. And I think probably the law schools are going to be the weakest peg in that table.
Yeah, well, in the bar associations, just to say something on that note, is the bar associations are under-resourced and understaffed and, yeah, you know, keeping up with CLE requirements. So, I mean, that you will find more progressive bar associations and great PMAs that are really fighting that fight. And I take my time as a PMA is to this day one of the most precious, you know, sections of my career that I have been, you know, able to have, and great friendships and lots of amazing experiences. Those resources are there for attorneys. There needs to be motivation on the attorney's part to go out and participate and dedication. Yeah. You know, well, so because that's part of it too. Is like, I mean, just coming from the inside, you see the attendance numbers.
Well, I was just going to say that's the other half of the coin, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, you can have a bar session that's wonderfully progressive and thinking all these things through, but if the attorneys don't support it and go to it and make it really an equal exchange of value, it's not going to succeed.
Exactly. Well, it's the commitment. I mean, I'm, you know, in my 30s, and I had previously owned and started lots of businesses that didn't go anywhere and that failed. And I speak to that very openly, because you have to be at a point in your life where you are ready to commit and to own the fact that you are the one responsible for the success of your business. You are responsible for the success of your career. And I have to voluntarily go out, seek out resources, find a mentor, you know, and make it happen in the same way that I have to go out and find clients to fund the technology that I want to use to run my business. So it's you really have to own it, and we can't make excuses for the way that the system is or the, you know, situation, you know, when there are a lot of things that we can be doing on our own to make it work. And there's a lot of firms that are very successful that have been there, you know, and done that. And now turn around and give back. You know, that's the other
part. Well, the good news is that those resources are out there and becoming ever more present. And people like you mentioned, our good friend Brett Burney, who, you know, is running a practice and yet at the same time creating this great legal educational resource with his course on using an iPad, you know, as an attorney, or his course on, I heard him fussing around this week with an idea of doing a course on how to use Microsoft Word. As an attorney, taking that to the next level. So, I mean, those resources are out there, and I think sometimes it's a question of, I don't know where to start, and I don't know what to do, and I think blogs like yours are so valuable to helping sort that process through. So I'm going to ask you, wrap up here, just a question, a silly question here. What's the story behind the name for your blog? Lex Tech Review. Am I showing my ignorance? Is there?
No. I mean, it's just Legal Technology Review. And, you know, Lex is used the Latin, as the Latin alternative, to legal. So that was the motivation behind it. And, you know, Tech Review is, you know, kind of my daily, journal or publishing side of my business. You know, just full disclosure, the education that I provide on Lex Tech Review is funded. I'm basically an outsourced CMO advisor for a lot, you know, a handful of vendors in the space. And so that's the revenue generating side of my business, is I work with vendors to bring, you know, help them refine their marketing messages and bring products to market, or tell them, you know, you can't sell this to a solo attorney until you add these three features, you know, kind of thing. So that revenue side of my business supports the educational arm.
So I was showing my ignorance there and not understanding the origins of the word Lex. And then lastly,
it's not like we write it out every day, right?
Yeah. So lastly, last question. Tell me just quickly a little bit about your you maintain a list of conferences.
Mm-hmm. I do.
Tell me about that, because I'm always a sucker for looking for a place to go.
Oh my gosh. Well, that list is probably, if I had to put a number on it, worth about at least $1.5 to $2 million, because that's how much money it cost to go to every single country.
If you went to all of them, yeah.
And I went to all of them. So during my time at Total Attorneys and at Smokeball and at How to Manage, you know, you go on the road, and what do? You get in front of attorneys and you sell products and you market to them and you do CLEs. So I've traveled and, you know, suffered a lot of, you know, broken nails and bleeding fingers, putting together trade show booths at all of these different conferences. And along the way tracked who actually goes. So if, you know, you're looking for a conference that is going to be majority solo small firms, I can tell you which ones are going to be that audience. If you're looking for a conference with criminal defense attorneys or with personal injury attorneys, or ones that talk about marketing, or ones that talk about the client cycle and managing delivery or family law, you know, there's so many out there. So that conference list is a resource for both attorneys who are looking to learn more about technology that might not know that something is happening in their city, but it's more so a resource for vendors so that they don't have to go and spend a bunch of hard-earned marketing dollars figuring out where they need to be. Because I will tell you, you know, you only have a certain amount of marketing budget to go around. And when you show up at a conference that you've invested $5,000 or $10,000 to be at, and there's only 100 people there, that's a really, really hard conversation to have when you get back
home. So,
oh, man.
That list to me sounds like gold. Is that a for-profit list that you maintain?
Yes. Yeah, so I charge $197, you know, for the list just to maintain it.
Yeah.
A regular basis.
I think that's brilliant. Does it also have like a Rotten Tomatoes rating, you know, for each
it
one?
It has my personal notes in it.
Yeah.
And then there's also a difference between projected attendance numbers and real attendance numbers. So when I'm consulting with vendors and they say, you know, this conference is going to have 5,000 people at it. And then I'm like, okay, let me tell you what the breakdown is, because I mean, I'll just kind of give you an example. And this is something, you know, that I level set with my vendor clients is, yes, it's going to have 5,000 people there. Okay, that number is true. But what you don't realize is the type of meetings that are on the schedule. Are there committee meetings? Are there governance meetings? Are there young lawyers division meetings? And after you take out all of those attendees that are associated with the governance and the committees and everything else, you're really looking at an effective pool of only about 1,000 or 1,500 prospects. And now all of a sudden, you know, those numbers change. So it's things like that where you would only have that kind of information if you were to actually go to the event. And in which case, it depends on the product, right? Because maybe they are looking at working with the members of that group that are on the committees and that do a lot of governance work. It really just depends on your product and, you know, geographic area. You know, if you can only sell in one state, which is the case for, you know, a lot of people who do like form, who are forms providers or do document assembly, where can we actually sell? So if you're going to spend $10,000 or $15,000 or $20,000 to do a national conference, but you can only sell to people in two states, have a realistic expectation of how much ROI you're going to get out of that show. So,
well, I think it's brilliant. That list, I think, I don't know who was telling me about it and made sure I ask you about it. But I think that's a really smart, my daughter's heavily involved, as a lot of our listeners know, in the cosplay world. And I think she needs to do a list like that for all the Comic-Con events around the country. So,
That would be great.
There you go.
It is, honestly, I can tell you it's one of the most valuable tools that that I've had in kind of like my marketing, you know, arsenal, because it has paid for itself 100 times over.
I can readily see that. Well, Chelsea, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be with me today. Let our audience know what's the best way for them to reach out to you if they want to follow up on anything that we've talked about today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Neil. And thank you to everyone who's listened. You can find me on Twitter at Chelsea Lambert or at Lex Tech Review. And you can also email me whenever you have a question or if you'd like to inquire about something that you see on the site. That is Chelsea, Chelsey, at LexTechReview.com.
Well, again, thanks ever so much for your time today. And I look forward to chatting with you again at a later occasion.
Me as well. Thanks, Neil.
Once again, I'd like to thank our friends at Market Circle, the makers of Daylight and Spotlight Branding, for being sponsors of today's podcast. Market Circles, as the makers of Daylight, provide the tool that I use to manage my cases, my clients, my calendar, my to-dos, the emails, and they do so all in one app that stays with me on my Mac, my iPhone, and my iPad. I use Daylight on my own in a solo environment, but you can also use it in a team. You can use Daylight to track the status of cases and delegate tasks to one another on your team, and you can see everyone's schedule all without having to interrupt anyone. Daylight is one of the tools that I use to stay organized, and it increases my efficiency, and therefore it only stands to reason that it'll do the same for you and your team if you use it in a broader environment. So visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight free for 30 days. And be sure to let them know that you heard about Daylight through the Law Entrepreneur in order to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. Also, our friends at Spotlight Branding, as always, have been very helpful in sponsoring this podcast. You know, I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to help keep me top of mind with my referral network. So visit www.spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in the law entrepreneur. So spotlightbranding.com/TLE to access your free gift. And as always, make sure that you visit our website, www.thelawentrepreneur.com, to see everything that's going on with the podcast and subscribe to our newsletter so that you can stay in the know and be the first on your block, so to speak, to gain insight into what's going on here. So once again, thanks for being here this time around. I appreciate your listenership. Hope to see you again next week on The Law Entrepreneur.